Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Andre Potvin as my special expert guest. Andre has 20 years of leadership experience with 11 years specializing in exercise and cardiac rehab. Andre acquired his Master of Science degree at UBC and instructed in the UBC School of Human Kinetics for 4 years. He is a recognized BCRPA trainer of leaders and is a member on both the BCRPA personal trainer and strength training subcommittees. Andre holds several certifications, including NSCA, Certified Strength and Conditioning Specialist, ACE, Clinical Exercise Specialist, and ACE, Certified Personal Trainer. Andre is president of InfoFit Educators, School for Fitness Professionals. He's the author of InfoFit Educators, Look Good in Your Jeans, A Blueprint for Living, Fitness Education Theory and Application Course, Weight Room Instructor Certification Course, Personal Fitness Trainer Certification Course, and Post-Injury Rehabilitation. Andre is also co-author of The Great Dumbbell Handbook, The Great Home Gym Handbook, The Great Body Ball Handbook, The Great Stretch Tubing Handbook, and The Great Medicine Ball Handbook. A number of books that he certainly contributed to because of his vast experience in the fitness game. Andre is an international lecturer of over 20 workshops and seminars related to anatomy, physical conditioning, program design, exercise analysis, resistance training, back and neck care, post-injury rehab, and postural correction. Wow, what an intro. Good morning, Andre. Welcome to SNU.
Hey, thanks, Corey, for inviting me.
Andre, it's great to have you on the show, and I know that you're really living on the cutting edge of health and fitness. Tell us, what's happening out there in the fitness world?
Well, specifically speaking, there's so many new trends that are going on in the industry. I just want to talk about personal training for a moment. Personal training is no longer the luxury of celebrities and wealthy socialites. According to the recent industry surveys, 50% of the fitness clubs out there are reporting that personal fitness training is among their top five profitable programs. So we have quite an uprise on a one-on-one relationship for people wanting to get fit. Interestingly enough, though, we have what we call the baby boomer age wave coming through, and we're just experiencing it now, and some researchers expect the number of people over the age of 65 to double by the year 2030. So if you're interested in being in the personal training industry, you can definitely look towards gearing your work towards the baby boomer. Also, these baby boomers are coming in with postural neck and pain issues and are getting fatter. So we as a society are casualties of our technology. And if you look at the recent statistics, 64% of the North American population is overweight and obese. And that, compared to the 1970s, just even to scare you even further, is that we see twice the amount of obesity in preteens than we did in the 70s, and three times the level of obesity in adolescents. So we are getting fatter as a nation, and it's getting to critical proportions, epidemic proportions. There's a lot going on. People are putting together all sorts of specialty classes, such as Pilates, yoga, group spinning, cycling classes, and, of course, one-on-one training. So if you're at all interested in the industry, the fitness industry, personal training, and your creativity is well needed for the future.
So what you're saying is that the demand for personal trainers is huge, but it's going to get bigger.
Undoubtedly. No question.
Now, I know that based on my own experience, I went through high school, and during that time, even in college, I didn't really learn how to take care of myself. Like, I couldn't, without my own investment of time and energy in my personal devotion, I wouldn't have known how to work half the machines in the gym. So we've got all these people coming out of the education program that don't know how to train, that don't know how to put a routine together. So is that really what a personal trainer does for these people?
You know, there's two roads here. We have the old thinking where the personal trainer is thought of as someone who just puts you through an exercise program. And then we have the more qualified personal trainer. And these individuals take a more holistic approach. They look at various aspects of your life, such as the lifestyle that you live, as well as your attitude that you come in with, your age, your fitness limitations, and they take all of this into consideration when designing a program. It's no longer these are the exercises, but rather it's putting the personal in personal training.
So there's a real personal touch, a connection with the individual on a mental, maybe even spiritual level.
Without question. Majority of the time, the reason people choose a personal trainer is through word of mouth. And then secondly, the reason they stay with the personal trainer is because of the bond, the relationship that has been developed. And I don't mean on a social level, but rather a professional level that allows an individual, the client, to explore their dreams and feel motivated and inspired. And having someone there to guide you through that process is very comforting, security oriented.
What about the dependency factor? What is the objective of a personal trainer? To teach their client to be independent or to be entirely reliant on their service?
Well, that's one of the things InfoFit teaches, and that is we believe, or my philosophy is, that personal trainers are there to provide the knowledge, the guidance, the support, the resources, the tools and training, and skills, of course, so that the individual can aspire towards their goals themselves. The trainer is then, once that individual has been guided on the introductory phases and goes through the intermediary phases, then there's this maintenance program, and that's what the trainer is there for, as a guide at that point.
So what do you say to someone who says, I can't train unless I have a personal trainer? Is that true?
No, that's just because the individual has chosen to take the easy way out. They abstained from self-responsibility. The number one issue is self-responsibility. And so the individual initially became aware that, okay, I need to do something about my health. And for whatever was the motivating variable, it could have been a death in the family, it could have been that they just noticed a tire around their belly. But once they became aware, they then had to accept the fact that they no longer could rely on old behaviors and patterns. So then they moved on to an acceptance that something new had to happen, something of a change. So then they made a decision, and that was to hire a trainer. This is all phenomenal in the initial stages. Then once they hired the trainer, they then went through the actions of actually showing up and doing the work. But then it's up to the trainer to guide the client to the next phase, and the next phase is functional independence, a new lifestyle change as opposed to a dependence on the trainer. And the trainer can do that, keep a client dependent by not giving them the tools on how they go about doing this on their own tomorrow, the next day, when in between appointments with the trainer.
So initially we give them fish, but then we want to teach them how to fish.
Exactly.
And also, I know that as an athlete myself, the importance of a coach, that I'm very subjective, and that when I'm in my sport, I can't always see myself. And so a really, really good coach can point out certain factors and really help me improve my skill and my game. Is that what a personal trainer does as well?
Yeah, a qualified trainer is there also to provide you with feedback and insight that you alone cannot see because you're too involved. And so we have these, myself included, we have limitations, and that is our perspective is our reality. So if I just happen to be having a lousy month for whatever reason, that whatever's going on in my life, my perspective of the world may be changed. And so I still believe that as my reality, and my behaviors will change accordingly. It's really nice, for example, when you start saying, no, I'm fat, I'm ugly, but your body hasn't changed at all. One, I'm sure all of you out there can appreciate, you wake up one morning and you feel fat, you feel ugly, you feel this, you feel that. And then other mornings you wake up and you feel great, but nothing has really changed. It's just our perspective. And so the trainer is a constant in your life. That trainer gives you the opportunity to provide insight that you alone can't always rely on.
That's great. Now, looking back in your own life, back to high school and maybe thinking of going into university at UBC, did you know that you were going to create this company? Was that what you had in mind, or is that just an evolution of a whole process? And maybe you can tell us about that.
No, okay. Well, when you mention that, it's like students asking me, Andre, how did you get started in the industry? And I tell them Gilligan's Island. Gilligan's Island was basically my motivation for getting fit. And it was an indirect relationship. So I didn't start off saying, I'm going to get fit. In fact, I tried that. I went into a weight room, and I mean, just picture this. It's a quiet weight room. No one's in there. And there's just these hard pieces of iron lying around. And I'm like, 15 years old, and I pick up one of these irons, and I lift it once, I lift it twice, I put it down, you hear this big clank echo in the room, I look around, and I go, what the hell am I doing here? And I walked out, I said, it's not fitness. Fitness for me is running out, kicking a soccer ball around, pushing someone to the ground, wrestling in hockey, you know? Just that was fitness to me, movement. So I couldn't understand how you could motivate yourself into the gym. So what I did do was I realized my life had certain passions, and so I started to implement fitness into the passions. So, for example, where does Gilligan's Island fit in all of this? Well, I used to pack my bags at school during the last recess. So when the bell rang, I would dart out before everybody else had a chance to leave school. I'd race down, catch the first bus, get home in record time, grab my newspaper route, and run a 2-mile route so I could get home for 4:30 to watch Gilligan's Island. You got it. And that was it. So now I'm sitting there, I'm breathing heavy. Gilligan, right? And it's funny. But then I started to go, hey, you know, I'm sitting around, there's commercials, I'm not too interested in the commercials. So I know I start doing push-ups because I wanted to get bigger, I wanted to get stronger, but I just couldn't get into a weight room. So I started to do push-ups on commercials and then sit-ups on other commercials and then watch Gilligan. And then 5 o'clock would come around and now the next show comes on and okay, so then I'd go off doing something else. Eventually, I started to notice my body change. So it was through those changes and the fact that I could increase reps and I was getting fitter that I started to become more interested in doing more work. So it was about teasing myself to want to do more, but it was a very evolutionary process for my own personal fitness. Then eventually it took me about maybe another year or two to finally rent out a space and buy my own set of weirder weights, and off I went. But the funny thing was, for that first year, my brother had a set of dumbbells, and so I would watch, do push-ups and sit-ups during commercials, but I would do the dumbbell work while watching Gilligan. So it would take my mind off of the mundanity. Is that a word? Probably not, eh? Mundanity?
No, yeah. Let's make it up.
Okay. The boredom that I thought existed with lifting a weight. So I'd do something pleasurable while my arm just kept moving. And I noticed when I did it really slowly, it was painful, but my arm blew up. So eventually, a year goes by, and now don't forget, all I'm doing are push-ups, sit-ups, and arm curls. So you can bet I start to look kind of funny, right? But I was getting noticed. In other words, you know, I lived in an Italian neighborhood, and they go, hey, Potvin, what are you doing? You know, sticking a pump in your arm, they're huge, right? And it was hilarious. And so I'd have these monster-sized arms. I was dumbbell curling 50 pounds, and I was weighing like 125. So you can imagine what the arms looked like. But what was interesting was I was getting recognition. I was getting recognized for being fit. And that took me to the next level. That was my incentive to keep going back. And then I started to slowly, when I got to university, iron it out. How did I get into the career of the fitness industry was simply because I knew, looking around, that a lot of people were miserable doing their 9-to-5 job. I wasn't going to be miserable. I said, every day I wake up, I want that day to be my best shot at being happy. And so I said, what do I love doing more than anything else? And that is physical stuff. And so that's what I did. I went into phys ed because that's all that was available at that time. We're talking, you know, at that time I made the decision in 1977, 78, that I was going to pursue phys ed. And then when I started doing phys ed and becoming a phys ed teacher, I realized I couldn't work with kids because I realized early on that if I continued to work with kids, I'd probably end up in prison for killing one of them. So I moved on to adult fitness, and that was the fitness industry. I went into the industry, I had already completed half of a master's degree at McGill University, and I thought I had reached the oasis. It was such fertile ground of ignorance. And I just thought, wow, here I come in. I don't know anything about this industry, but I have a lot of science. And so I just turned my mind into this beginner's mind, became a human vacuum, learned everything about the industry, and then I started to realize, hey, you know, I know a little bit about this. I could contribute this. And it was through those contributions and the positive feedback that I was getting from my fitness class people and from people wanting me to come in and speak to their instructors that I eventually realized over time that being an educator was my calling.
Now, you've created InfoFit, which has become very successful and well-known.
And maybe you can tell us what InfoFit is. I know it's a school for educating personal trainers, and I know a number of people that have gone through your fitness programs, including Tracy. So give us some details about InfoFit and maybe help us understand what it exactly is.
Well, years ago, I was trying to find my place. And so what I had to do was I had to do a lot of self-introspection work. I wanted to know what it was I wanted to contribute. I knew I wanted to be in the industry, and I said, I want to make a contribution. And so I did a lot of introspection work and came up with a philosophy or a mission statement, if you will. And the mission statement really reads, my objective is to enhance the quality of leadership in the industry so that those individuals who are interested in making a pronounced or profound impact on this industry and the lives of many sedentary people, they could aspire towards the goals based on my work. And that's it. So it was to enhance the quality of leadership. And so I said, how do I go about doing that? It's through teaching, it's through writing, it's through videos, it's through CDs, it's whatever mechanisms are out there that can pass the message on. Over the course of trial and error, I just found that the leadership courses was the best way to go for me. And I found instead of reaching 20 people in a fitness class, I could reach 20 instructors who over the course of their career would reach maybe 10,000 people each or more. And so that was my vision.
So someone that's gone through your program and they're now out there working as a personal trainer, what have they gone through if they've only gone through your program? What courses have they taken? How long has it taken them to get through?
Good question. I recently saw an article that was denouncing certain personal training certifications. They said, all you have to do is buy the book, study the book, go and write an exam, and you can call yourself a personal trainer. And there are such organizations out there. As we discussed earlier, to be a quality personal trainer requires a lot more in-depth education and practicum. So that's what InfoFit has. InfoFit has, to start with, about a year-long program of both theoretical courses, examinations, and then practical courses and practical examinations. And that's just to become the basic personal fitness trainer. So, for example, we start off with a fit theory course, which is exercise physiology, human anatomy, and how that applies to fitness, your workouts and the workouts of others. Then you come to a practicum course, and the practicum course is called the weight training on-floor instructor. And so this course is designed to get people trained to work on-floor, just showing, demonstrating how to use equipment in the gym, but not really putting anybody on pure individualized programs. So once they've done those two courses, they have to take a theoretical exam, and then they have to take a practical exam. Once they've done that, then they need to go out and get practical experience before they come to the personal fitness trainer certification course. So they need to have about 20 program designs done. Now, if the way it's been sitting in the industry here in British Columbia anyway, is there's no avenue for that. It's you just go and beg and plead with whatever gym owner will allow you to work in their gym under their insurance. You see, because you're not certified yet, so the scary thing is a lot of people are working with people without insurance. So I developed a program, which is the practicum. It's called the Apprenticeship Training Practicum Program, or ATP, and it's just designed to give those students the avenue by which they can get their practical experience. There's two phases to it. One is the on-floor, where they learn about all the equipment and how to work with large volumes of gym members, and then how we take that to the second phase, which is where they work one-on-one with clients, and they're covered through our insurance, then eventually move on. So they come to the personal trainer's course after they've done the first practicum, and then they learn more about one-on-one training. Then they go out and have to do another practicum within our program or find their own unsupervised. Then they go through another personal training examination, another personal training practicum. By the time all of that is said and done, you're looking at a minimum of training and study, minimum.
Now, as I understand it, personal training is not regulated by the government of Canada or, as far as I know, in America as well. Like, there's no minimum level of education required. Anybody can pretty much call themselves a personal trainer, say, unlike a pharmacist or a medical doctor. You need a license, and the certification is a mandate, a standard, or even teaching in school, for example. You have to go through the system. And personal training is not taught as a curriculum with a degree in any university, as far as I know.
That's correct.
So there are privately owned institutions, one of which is yours, InfoFit, and then there are many others like IDEA, ACE that come to mind. So they all compete with each other, and they offer different styles of teaching, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
So when one is going into this field, how does one know from the outside what direction to take, what outfit to go with? Because they're probably saying that we're the best and the other one isn't as good as us, or things like that.
Okay, good question. First, before the individual embarks on this profession, and I want to make it clear, this is a profession. So I've met many individuals who start off thinking it's a job, and it's not a job. And so if you want to get involved in it, either on a part-time basis or full-time basis, it's about thinking, I want to be a professional. And with that comes a certain level of trust that the community will give you based on your degree or your diploma. So given that, then you start to look at the different organizations out there and look at what they require for you to get their certification. So for example, there are organizations out there that base their certification on volume. And that is, you read the book, you do some of their study guides, you write the exam, you pass, they call your personal trainer. The interesting thing is, you can just go on their website and they ask you, there's a waiver form, and they ask you on this, you have 100 hours of practical experience, one-on-one training experience, and then we'll let you write the exam. Well, all you have to do is click agree, and well, they've done their bit. They've, you know, screened you. But and if I mean, there's just a lot of people lying, right, just to go write the exam. So a good student, you know, university level student could write the exam, never worked out a day in his or her life, never stepped into the gym, and call themselves a personal trainer. So you want to be looking for low costs, short courses that have nothing else prerequisite or post-requisite to the course. If it's just, here, take the course, send me your money, hit agree online application form, and you're in, then just take a heads up on that. All right. If you want to be a professional, both have confidence in yourself and your ability to inspire others to make a lifelong change in their life, you need quality education, and that takes time. So you want to look for organizations like the American College of Sports Medicine, who's just recently come out with their own personal fitness trainer certification. They require you to jump through a lot of hoops. Now, one of the things I like to present to my instructors, the individuals wanting to be trainers, is I say, you know, we're very young as an industry. And I want you to think back to what nursing involved 2 centuries ago. Nursing, basically at the Civil War level, didn't require that you had all this education. It was, okay, you want to be a nurse? Can you handle the sight of blood? And us, you know, chopping through bone. If you can, you're a nurse. But eventually over time, when we were out of wars, they started to slowly put together educational processes. Same with registered massage therapy. So we are very young. We're taking a lot of criticism, but I think it's out of context. Being a young organization, we are moving at a rapid pace in comparison to other professions and the way they started out centuries ago. We are moving at a rapid pace to become quite legitimate. So I think at this point, look at how much it's going to cost, how long it takes for the study, and what quality of instructor do you want to be. I encourage my trainers to say to themselves in the morning, and I do this with my clients as well, when you wake up in the morning, ask yourself, what quality of a human being do I want to be today? Then you translate that into, what quality of leader do I want to be? What quality of husband, wife, son, daughter? Then at the end of the night, I say, now ask yourself, before you go to bed, when you're just private, what quality of leader was I today? What quality of son was I today? And it's those two questions that are your anchoring statements for how you present yourself throughout the day. So if you want to, you know, get the quick fix, get out there and just call yourself a personal trainer and really have this gnawing feeling deep within you that you're kind of scapegoating the whole thing as opposed to doing the quality work behind it, just take note, the profession is evolving and you will be a dinosaur.
Thinking of some of your graduates, let's talk maybe about the lifestyle of a personal trainer. Say a busy individual who's engaged at several gyms, maybe they have their own personal environment that they build or rent or lease? I mean, how does it work when you graduate? What is the next step? And what kind of an income can these people make?
Good question. I don't like to rose tint my students' worlds. I like to tell them straight off, you're a technician and an entrepreneur when you're a personal trainer. Initially, I suggest that they get on board with a company that's already gone through the business growth phase, and that is a company that has an established marketing plan, administration plan. They have specific policies and procedures that you can get involved in, start learning about, and then as you become a more technically astute trainer, then you can start to look at what your contribution will be, because now you have developed much more of your base and your skills. Then after that, you have to make the very insightful decision. So you have to inform yourself, informed decision, whether or not you want to take on the role of being an entrepreneur. So you will see, you know, we see this, or perhaps the image, the glamour image of, oh yeah, personal trainer, that's great. I just charge, you know, this much for 1 hour, and I make all this money, and it's great. It is a very physically demanding job. It is emotionally challenging because you're dealing with a lot of individuals. You are as close to being a bartender as you can get, okay? So people, when they're training, they've come in with a lot of baggage. They come in with a lot of emotion, and you will hear and see a lot of that emotion as it goes. So you have to learn the technical skills, and then you have to decide, do I want the hassles of being an entrepreneur? And if you have that entrepreneurial spirit, then you have to take entrepreneurial courses. And there's plenty of them out there in magazines or journals, trade journals out there, to teach you how to run your business profitably. Do not buy into the concept that, oh yeah, I'll be a personal trainer and I'll just collect money here and collect money there. There are subcontracting fees if you go to a gym. There's insurance issues that you have to be aware of. And so it costs a lot to run your business, and then you can only make as much money as you physically are able to participate in the actual hands-on. So it's a challenge, and like any challenge, your heart, you have to have a passion for this. Otherwise, it's a job, and if it's a job you want, then that's not the place for you to be. You want to start looking elsewhere.
Now, you mentioned a couple of times the insurance liability issue. What does that mean to the personal trainer? Are they at risk?
Yeah, in the U.S., many personal trainers have been sued. In Canada, there have been lawsuits, but not to the extent that you would find in the States. Trainers are getting sued because they are doing things. They are either doing things by omission or commission. They're either doing things that they weren't aware that they could or could not do, or they were aware but did anyway, or they just weren't aware and didn't either did something or didn't do something. I don't know if that's English. I don't know if that makes sense, but it basically means you have a lot of trainers out there who aren't clear what their scope of practice is. And that's through the educational process that they have to become aware of that. And insurance is part of their scope of practice. They have to be very clear that they need professional liability insurance. That means that if they did anything incompetent or negligent, that they are able to, through insurance, pay compensation to these individuals they have hurt. I'll tell you a little scam that's going on. Trainers, interestingly enough, and it's really hard because it's not so legislated, monitored, it's really hard for a trainer to say, oh, okay, you know, I'm going to be 100% quality, and I'll renew my insurance, I'll renew my CPR, I'll renew my first aid. So they are kind of self-regulating. And what is happening is, in one scenario, you'll have this gym whose insurance company says to the gym, who is subcontracting out to personal trainers, you know, when was the last time you checked your subcontractor personal trainers, their insurance, and their certifications for renewal and update? And so I'll speak in terms of this one situation. This individual went out and asked, put up a big notice, gave him plenty of time. You know, we need your insurance papers updated. We need this and that and the other thing. Of something like 70 personal trainers that were in this building, using the facilities, just paying rent, basically, of 70, less than 10%. Actually, after 8 months, provided the documentation. Now, you can read into that all you like, But if I had the documentation, it would be no problem for me just to get it to you. But you have to wonder why there's a huge surge all of a sudden in continuing education workshops just around that time, right? So a lot of trainers, if the owners of the facilities don't put the trainers responsible for updating, then a lot of them will just let it slide. And, you know, that's part of the human, I think,
condition.
You know, just, you know, if I'm not pushed, if I'm not shoved, it's not seeming to be broken, I don't have to fix it. And that's why I really encourage trainers to think about what in the morning and in the evening, what quality of human being do you want to be? What quality of leader? Because when it all comes down to it at night, you're the one who has to go to bed all by yourself and answer that one question to yourself. So that's the self-regulation. So whether or not the gym owner asks you the question or not, it comes down to, you know, self-responsibility.
Well, hey, it's already that time. I can't believe it. You know, like we spent 30 minutes just getting into the topic, and there's so much more that I wanted to get into. So we're definitely going to have you back, Andre.
I'd like to be back.
Before we go, I want to make it clear to everybody out there how to get involved and make contact with you. Do you have a website?
Yeah, it's infofit.net. I had to think about that for a moment. Infofit.net, or you can email to me directly, andre@infofit.net.
Okay, that's great. So that's www.infofit.net. And you've got a phone number to call?
604-943-6316.
Okay, that was excellent. A wonderful interview. Thanks for that incredible insight. For everyone out there who's considering tagging on some personal training information or knowledge or schooling, be sure and call InfoFit and look it up on the internet. Andre, we always ask our special guests for a final word of inspiration and insight. Do you have anything for us today?
My final word of insight is, to me, the meaning of life is to be happy. And I wake up in the morning and I ask myself, what impediments do I put in place that cause me to take two steps back from my quest to be happy? And then I look at, what actions do I need to put in place so that I can be happy? You know, I heard someone once say, in life, pain is inevitable, but misery is optional. And so, basically, I think we all have the ability to control or at least guide our destiny.
Andre Potvin, president of InfoFit Educators, author, teacher. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Corey.
Bye.
This concludes this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. We hope you have enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview. SNU is produced monthly and is a division of Holly Health Services, located in Burnaby, British Columbia. For details regarding subscription, please visit CoreyHolly.com. This is Doug Austin, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Represent your lifestyle. New way of life. Listen, it's SNU, sing along, it's true, yo, coming through straight, Malik, with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life, live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHolly.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.